Hello and welcome to the next episode of the Irish Shamanism Show. It's been a while and I apologise for that. I've had a lot going on in my life, but here we are in the next episode. And in this podcast today, we're going to talk about a little bit about spirit guides. So who they are, what they are, how we can find them and how we can recognise them. Sometimes called spirit helpers or spirit allies, and lots of different names and across lots of different traditions. But today I'm going to talk about them as spirit guides. You're listening to the Irish Shamanism Show, a podcast all about Irish nature-based spirituality, healing and community. My name's Anna, a native Irish Bamfaza, or woman of knowledge, aka a tribal healer or shamanic practitioner, to give it a more well-known term. I'm also a holistic counsellor and psychotherapist, trainer, and ordained pagan priest and celebrant. In this show, we'll be discussing all things to do with traditional Irish and Celtic healing methods, nature-based spirituality, and what it's like to be a modern Irish pagan. I will also be chatting to some very exciting and interesting members of the wider pagan community for their take on Indigenous spirituality, paganism, traditional healing practices, and many other related topics, issues, and concerns. So thanks for tuning in. Fill your cauldron with your beverage of choice. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Fáil te romhaibh agus beannacht tí. Who are these spirit guides? What are they? What do they do? Where do they come from? And, you know, lots of all these other kind of questions. I'm going to attempt to have a look at some of those things today. But before we start, I just wanted to say, as always, that everything that I say in this podcast, in this episode and every other episode, is my opinion. There is a lot of different information out there with regards to shamanism, in inverted commas. I've already spoken about the issues around calling this thing that I and a lot of other people do in Ireland and in a lot of other countries, native cultures, shamanism. So I'm not going to go into that again. But I do want to just stress that this is all my opinion. It all comes from my work, the work that I've done, the training that I've had, and the work that I have done in and with spirit. So now that I've gotten that out of the way, let's get to it. So these spirit guides, also called spirit helpers, spirit allies, spirit animals. Now, I do want to make another thing clear. There seems to be a fashion nowadays to say things like, oh, you know, I've heard people say things like, oh, vodka is my spirit animal, or even some celebrity is my spirit animal, or this thing is my spirit animal, or that thing is my spirit animal. And I just really want to say, please stop doing that. It is so disrespectful and so inappropriate to do, because when you're saying something like that, you are talking about a very real living spirituality, belief and faith system. It is extremely, extremely disrespectful to say something like that, especially because these are Indigenous cultures, the beliefs of Indigenous cultures. And it's just really wrong. And I think that if the tables were turned and people were saying that kind of thing about other people's religions, then they would have a big problem with that. So please, please, please stop saying that, because it is extremely disrespectful. Okay, so that out of the way. I have been taught to call these helping spirits my spirit guides. And some people might call them different things. And there are specific names given to them in specific cultures. So we have to be very careful about that as well. For example, I would never say that my animal guide, for example, which is what I call my animal guide. I know that that sounds a bit weird, but that's the way I put it, is my spirit animal. I would avoid saying that. Now, I could slip up and say that because, again, it's something that I've heard a lot, but I would try my best not to. So if I do say that, I apologize in advance. I would also really avoid saying something like my totem animal, because again, my feeling is that that comes from a very specific culture that is not my culture. So I would call my helping animal guide my animal guide. Now, there are, as I said, there are many other people who call them different things. I would call them as a group my spirit guides. And so who or what are these spirit guides? So my belief is, and also some of the indications that I've got from them and from spirit in general, is that we're all in a group and we are all guides for each other. So maybe in another lifetime or another dimension, who knows, I was a guide and somebody else inhabited the spiritual body. So we're all connected, and within this group, we're all connected and we're all helpers of each other. So we also have, I just want to make another point clear, is that obviously we also have guides, helpers and allies on this plane of existence. So we're specifically now talking about those on the plane of spirit. And there are lots of different types of guides that we might have to help us in the work that we do. And the idea is that we build a really strong relationship with all of these. A lot of people will often come to me and say, okay, so my guides are ancestors. And yes, ancestors are part of it. Or they might think that guides are the souls of dead people who haven't crossed. And that can also be part of it. But I'll get into that a bit later. The number one guide that within my tradition and the tradition that I've been taught about, that is our number one helper, is our animal guide. So our animal guide is the one that is generally the first guide that we meet when we start this kind of work and we start journeying and we start traveling to spirit and we start working in spirit. And it is also the one that is there beside us throughout all of our adventures, all of our journeys, all the healing work that we do, all the learning that we do, and all the helping that we try to do for ourselves and for others. Our animal guide is the number one guide, in my opinion, and from what I was taught. And our animal guide is not the animal that we like the best. So people will often say to me, oh, I bet my animal guide is a lion or an eagle or, I don't know, a wolf. You know, those are very common ones because those are the ones that we often see in popular culture. And when we think about like the Native American traditions and that, we think of like those particular guides, and they're strong and they're fierce. And, you know, who wouldn't want a wolf as an animal guide? Who wouldn't want a lion as an animal guide? Who wouldn't want an eagle? Who wouldn't want a, you know, I don't know, a, you know, a strong, fierce animal guide? But it's not the animal that you like the best. And it's not even necessarily the animal that you associate with the most or the animal that you see around you the most. Your animal guide is the one that is the one that will be the most helpful to you. And you mightn't even recognize it at the time when you get to know them, but in time you will come to recognize that that is the case, that this animal guide is the one that you need. So let's just talk about when we're talking about animals. So, for example, my guide is a horse. And particularly a white mare. Now, sometimes she comes to me in the form of a male horse, a stallion, or sometimes it might be like a black horse or a different type of horse. But generally, 99% of the time, let's say 85% of the time, it's a white mare. And So is that, people say, is that a particular white horse that I'm talking about? No. So when we talk about our animal guide, this is the spirit of the animal. It is the, or even the spirit of that whole species of animals. And spirit can only talk to us in metaphor. There's no other way for spirit to talk to us. So when, for, we'll think of the horse again, for example, when we think of the horse, what do we think of when we think of horses? OK, I know that there are some people who maybe don't like horses or who are scared of horses. But in general, when we think of horses, we're thinking about, well, this, again, speaking from my own personal opinion, and I think generally most people would agree, we're thinking about strong, you know, loyal, herd animals. So very family orientated, intelligent, emotional, really spiritual animals, but they also have like speed and endurance and a real, some of them can be really quirky personalities. So that's what we're looking at. We're looking at those characteristics that that animal can, that that animal has, and that's what the animal brings to the relationship in general. But then also each animal guide will have its own personality as well, very much so. And as you get to know them, you really get to know that personality of that guide. So often people will be quite surprised by their animal guide, and they'll actually often be quite disappointed as well. So, you know, someone's might be a bee, or I don't know, a rat, or, you know, or maybe a cat, or a badger, or a fox, or a cow. So it's really about keeping a very open mind and then really looking at, well, what does this animal represent? And okay, maybe it mightn't be the sexiest or the most exciting animal out there, but it really represents, like cows, for example, they're such beautiful souls. They're so sensitive and they have such a depth, but they're also really curious. And again, they're herd animals and they're really fierce as well. I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen cows protecting each other or chasing a dog that comes into a field. I mean, they'll be really intimidating, and but they're also really loving, and they form really strong bonds if allowed, and very, very, very strong family bonds with mothers and their calves. And they have a lot of spirit and a lot of strength and determination. So there's also that spiritual aspect as well, where, for example, the cow has a really strong connection to the land of Ireland. You know, back in the Celtic times, cows were a measure of somebody's worth. And I mean, I don't mean worth as in their worth as a human. I mean, they're literally their financial worth, how much they, you know, it was almost like a currency. And kings and you know, queens and chieftains went to battle over cows being stolen. I mean, we have all of our, you know, books and all of our ancient texts are full of stories of battles because of cows. And then also you have like very strong connection with certain gods and goddesses of Ireland who took the forms of cows, and you know, the and connection with different landmarks around Ireland as well. And it's the same with the horse, not the exact same, but the horse was a symbol of sovereignty within Ireland. It, you know, there was lots of different rites and ceremonies involving horses when it came to kingship and kings taking up the mantle of their kingship within Ireland. And also horses were very much a symbol of spirit messengers. And a lot of the old stories and the legends and the myths involve horses being the messenger between the realm of spirit and the realm of this world. And they would often carry people between the two, and you would be safe as long as you stayed on the horse. And when I'm doing journeys with big groups of people that I don't know a lot of them, maybe, or, you know, I'm at a festival or something, horse is like the catch-all spirit animal. So if people don't know what their spirit animal already is, and a lot of people don't, some people do, but a lot of people don't, then I would suggest them using the horse, and particularly the white horse, as the kind of fallback spirit animal. So there's a lot of different animals that are very strongly connected to the land of Ireland, and they have all of that symbolism going for them as well, as well as the attributes that the animal has itself and that they can bring to the table. So as I said, the power animal is the number one guide. That will generally be the first guide that you meet. It'll be the first guide they get to know. And then that guide will be with you by your side and will bring you to meet other guides. Or for example, if you're going to do a journey with a specific objective in mind, you would say to maybe your animal guide, bring me to meet, you know, I don't know, such and such a spirit, or somebody who can help me with this problem, or somebody who can tell me about that, or bring me to meet goddess this, or, you know, bring me to this place or that place and show me how to do this or that, bring me to my past, or, you know. So that's your animal guide is the very, very important guide to meet and to get to know. And it's really, really valuable to take a lot of time to really get to know your animal guide. And I'll be speaking in the future about how to do that. So you generally have, most people generally have one animal guide. Now, having said that, a lot of people have more than one as well. One thing that we speak a lot about in Irish spirituality is that the rules don't apply. And that can be really, really confusing to people, but they really don't. And our animal guide is with us generally from the moment we're born, maybe even, you know, through multiple lifetimes, who knows, and then is with us throughout all our life, and then, you know, will be with us until. And there's something really nice about that, I think, about all your guides being with you. I mean, I know that I'm never alone, and I don't mean that in a kind of a creepy way, but whenever anything bad happens, or I'm feeling down, or I'm feeling not great or whatever, or even if I'm feeling really good, I always know that I have my guides around me, and they're there to help me, and they're there to comfort me, and they're there to rejoice with me. They're there to hold space for me. I can talk to them, and it's just a really nice feeling to have. And when you get really used to doing lots of journeying and all the rest of it, you don't even need that. You don't need to be banging a drum or going into a trance state. You know, they're always with you, and it's just about keeping an open mind about that, and just keeping an open mind about all your senses as well, about how they communicate to you in different ways. So yeah, there's that. So your animal guide. So then you also have lots of other animal guides that will come into your life maybe at times when you need them the most. And they might be very specific guides, and they might only be there for a short time, or they might be there for a longer time to support you in a way that you need to be supported. So, for example, I know that somebody I was working with once, and, you know, this is just an example, and they had a wolf, the spirit, a wolf come in as an animal guide during a particular time. And at that time, they were going through a breakup, and wolf is all about family, and wolf is all about, you know, protection of family and relationship. So it was a very strong guide to have at that time when this person was going through this breakup. And you'll find that a lot. For example, as I said, I have my horse guide, but I also have a crow or a raven. I think it's a blackbird. It's a corvid. I nearly said COVID there, but it's a corvid. And I know that she's with me, and she sits on my left shoulders whenever I'm in really dangerous situations within my journeys, and she's my protector. So they will come in and out at different times when needed, either during journeys and spiritual work, or else during your actual physical existence life when you're going through different things. And also as well, we work with seasonal guides, seasonal animal guides. So, for example, in the winter time, we work with the spirit of the bear. And I'll be talking about all of this a lot more in greater detail. You know, in springtime, we work with the spirit of the hawk or the hare as well, which obviously are real symbols of the springtime. In the summertime, we work with the stag of the forest. And then in the autumn time, we would work very much with, you know, like the salmon of knowledge. And so these are our seasonal guides, and there's different ones as well, but that's just to give an example. And then we also work with our power animals. So our power animals are the animals that embody our sense of empowerment. And that's something that's really, really important. It's maybe one of the most important things when it comes to healing and shamanism is empowerment and being in a place of personal power. So we have also these power guides or power animals that work with us specifically when it comes to power, and they are what we work with when we do what's called power retrievals as well. And these are for people who've lost their power, and that's a very common thing to happen, especially in this day and age. And it's also a very specific healing technique that we do called a power retrieval, as I already mentioned. So as you can see, it's these animals, spirit animals, animal guides are very, very important when it comes to shamanic work. And it's not really surprising because we've already spoken a lot on how shamanism is very much a nature-based spirituality. And being a nature-based spirituality, obviously animals as part of the you know, the natural kingdom are very much a big part of that. So animals play, animals, animal spirits, animal guides, also called totem animals in other traditions, are very, very important. So after that, what other kind of guides do we have? Well, for me, the next very, very important group of guides that I work with are my ancestors. And I will be speaking again as well on how important ancestral work is within the Irish tradition. And I think a lot of different traditions, but also not even shamanically or paganism-y. I think just within Irish culture, reverence of the dead and those who've passed before and family members and working with that and really honouring those people is so, so important. So our ancestors is very, very important, ancestral work. And generally, you will have a few guides, ancestral guides, who will be by your side, and who will and then again, you might have fixed ones and you might have other ones that will just come in and out at different times, depending on the work that needs to be done. And often what I find is that when we talk about ancestral guides, there are three types of ancestral guides that I've come across anyway and that I've worked with. And the first one is obviously my ancestors of blood and of lineage. And, you know, that's my family that goes back generations. But, you know, how far back do you go? And when you go back far enough, we're all related, really. So they are very important, but, you know, they could be the same for other people as well. And then we have ancestors of place, of land, of the place that we're in, and they're also very important. And then we also have ancestors of spirit. So those are ancestors that are more of your, from your spiritual lineage. And I find that they're also extremely important, those kind of ancestors. And in fact, one of them that I work with in particular is one of my most important guides. I would say nearly my second most important guide that I work with very, very regularly, almost on a daily basis.
She comes in and she works with me, and she has taught me a lot, and she continues to teach me and to further my education around shamanism, and particularly around healing techniques and healing work. We also often have people who are close to us who have passed over within our own lifetime. So people like our parents, friends, maybe if we've lost siblings, or, you know, grandparents, uncles, aunts, that kind of thing. And it could also be maybe people that we didn't really even know that well, but people can often be surprised and say, oh, that's my Uncle Jimmy, but I think I only met him once, or I never met him. He lived in America or something like that. Or that was my, you know, my mother's friend. And that can happen quite regularly. And that can be very interesting when that happens, you know, and it can be very interesting to get to know these people and really find out, well, why are you my guide? We didn't know each other when we were alive. So, you know, why are you my guide now? And this is a really important point. We talk to our guides like we're talking to family members, like we're talking to friends, like we're talking to anybody else. Well, I do anyway. And a lot of most people that I know who do this kind of work do the same. And when we say talking to, a lot of that, again, is metaphorical. Although some people, when they're talking to their guides, it is actual talking, and they're hearing the answers like it's somebody talking back to them, like as in real life, IRL. For me, it's more of a kind of a knowing. So we're using all our senses. And often as well, it's being shown different scenarios then that you have to interpret. And that can be where it can be difficult to interpret. And that's where sometimes you might need help from somebody who might be a bit more experienced with this kind of thing to help you to interpret. As I said, spirit generally talks to us in metaphor. So we have to then interpret those metaphors. So it's a knowing, or it's, I'm a very visual person. So a lot of it is done through my third eye. And it's a lot of it is like stuff that I see in inverted commas, you know, with my eyes shut. And then I kind of interpret that subconsciously. I hope that makes sense. But other people, they actually do hear. And I have had experiences where it has been a voice. I have heard voice. Not very often, though. But that can be more often for some people. Other times, it's just feelings. You just get feelings and you have to interpret those feelings. So it's all your senses are coming into play when we're working with spirit. And that's really important. So obviously that can be such a lovely, lovely experience. I mean, I'll just talk from my own experience now as well. When I first started training, well, not when I first, but a couple of years into my training, I started working with other people, and I worked with, I feel a bit emotional now telling this story. It actually always makes me feel emotional, but I worked with my mum, my mother, my lovely mother, and I did a journey for her, and her father came in, my grandfather. Sorry, I'm actually feeling a bit emotional about this. I always feel emotional, and I never met him because he died when my mum was 16. And through doing this work, I met my maternal grandfather. Now, he was not my guide, but he came in as my mother's guide. And, you know, and some people might say, oh, you know, you can just, maybe you're just imagining this. And maybe I am. And actually, it is all imagination, because it's all of this work is done through your imagination, because that's where spirit works, in the realm of image. So he called my mother a different name to the one that she is generally known as. He also told me things about her that I didn't know, or that I don't think I ever knew in my kind of active memory, and that I was able to verify with her afterwards. And it was a beautiful experience. And that's where this kind of work can be so rewarding and so it's just so beautiful. And so, yeah, so and my own granny, who I loved very much, who I love very much, Kitty, is one of my guides. I don't see her very often in my work. That's my paternal grandmother. And again, it makes me feel emotional because it is, I loved her, obviously. And it is just so wonderful when she comes to visit me when I'm doing my work and I'm journeying. It doesn't, unfortunately, it doesn't happen as often as I would like it to, but it is a really special gift. It is a very special moment when she comes to visit me. I have a feeling she's probably very, very busy in spirit, because she's always been very busy, and she always was in when she was on the physical plane. So she probably doesn't have time to come and visit me very often. Okay, so people will often say to me, oh, you know, I lost my father 3 months ago, and I wonder, is he one of my guides? And, you know, or somebody else. And the indication that we get from spirit is that it takes time is very different in spirit. It's really important to remember that time is and time does not have the same meaning in spirit as it does in physical, in the physical world. So often our guides will be very kind of pushy with us, and this is a whole other discussion for another day, but just to say this now, and they want us to learn new things, they want us to hurry up, and they want us to become what they, you know, what they know we're going to become and what they've seen us becoming before in past lives or whatever. And they forget that we're just, you know, earthly bound people in these meat bodies, and you know, time is completely different for spirit. So the indication is that when somebody passes over, it can take and it does take up to 2 years for the transition to take place fully. And so usually I say to people that anybody who's passed within the last 2 years will not be your guide. And generally it takes even longer for somebody to show up as a guide for somebody, if they show up at all. I mean, it's not a given that somebody will be your guide, although you can go and visit them or ask to visit them in spirit if you're doing this work. And that may or may not happen. But you can definitely ask your animal guide to, you know, they might be busy doing something else, and it's not always a possibility, but it may be a possibility. And there's also an indication, I know this is going to sound a bit weird, that for a person who has passed to become a guide to somebody, that there's a kind of a training process that needs to be gone through. Again, I know that sounds a bit weird, and I don't have, it's an indication that I've got from spirit. I don't have a lot of information about that. So yeah, again, it's always more than 2 years at least. And then after that, you know, there's a lot of different guides. For me personally, the next category of guides that I find very important would be deity, gods and goddesses. And generally the ones that I work with the most, or who are my guides, are those of this land of Ireland. So it might be somebody like Saint Bridget or goddess Bridget, but then if you're not pagan, for example, if you're Catholic or, you know, maybe undecided, it might be Saint Bridget. It could be somebody like An Morrigan or Lou or An Dagda, or, you know, there's lots of different guides that might show up. So I work very closely with Bridget. But I also do work with the Morrigan, and there's very specific work that Lou helps me with as well. But then I know other people who have Egyptian gods and goddesses, or they might have Norse or Greek or Roman or Indian, or, you know, there's lots of other gods and goddesses that may show up. And often what will happen is that one might show up as a guide. And again, this mightn't be one of your team. It might just be somebody who comes in to help you with a specific problem, and then, you know, you mightn't see them again, or you might see them again years later to help you with another problem or a similar problem or something like that. So yeah, ascendant masters, I suppose, come into the same kind of category, like saints and, you know, like the Green Man, or it could be somebody like, you know, John the Baptist or Moses or Krishna or somebody like that, you know, one of the ascendant masters group of people. And then along that line, again, you might have one of the members of the angelic realm. So I find that a lot of people, particularly within the Western world, would have members of the angelic realm working with them. And sometimes they are like biblical angels, and sometimes they're just beings of pure light. And that's how I see them. And I do have members of the angelic realm that work with me for specific reasons, a specific type of work that I do. But obviously I'm not a Christian, but for me, they're just beings of pure white light. They're just pure energy, pure, pure energy. And they are amazing to work with. They are beautiful, beautiful to work with. Other kinds of guys that might come up would be maybe elementals. And you might have like the element of fire or the element of water, or and they might show themselves in physical human form, or they might just show themselves as, you know, just a burning bush, or, you know, something like that. When you're doing this work, you really just, one of the most important things you have to do is you might keep your mind open and keep all of your senses open. It's really important. One other thing as well, you might hear some kind of shuffling and stuff going on. That's me speaking with my hands, because I'm a hand speaker. So if you're hearing stuff like that or shuffling, that's just me speaking with my hands. It could also be my dog who sits in with me when I'm doing these podcasts, and you could hear her shaking or scratching at the door or even whining in the background. She's got separation anxiety, so she likes to stay with me or my daughter all the time. So just in case you hear her in the background, that's what it is. Other people work a lot with fairies or members of the Aeshi, the good people, the good neighbors, Andinawa. They have lots of different names. Personally, I don't work with them very much because they kind of scare me a bit, and I do feel that it's something that I'm going to have to work on a lot more in the future, but up to now I haven't really worked much on that, on those relationships. Mostly because I'm really scared. If you do come across them, you must treat them with respect, the utmost respect. They are not the beings that we have been kind of tricked into thinking that they are, you know, these glittery, shiny little Tinkerbell fairies with the wings and all the rest of it. These are immortal beings with a completely other sense of ethics. I'm not saying they're bad, but they're not good either. They're not good or bad as we humans understand it. There's a very, very deep and complicated relationship that Irish people have with the good neighbors. I'm not going to go into that now, and I might never will, because I'm not really sure that I understand them well enough to talk about them. Maybe I might get somebody else on the channel to talk about it, somebody who knows a lot more about it than I do. But for now, I have somebody in mind, somebody very exciting and very interesting. But for now, I'm just going to say that I don't really work with them that much. And if one of them approaches me, I am very honored, and you know, but I'm also very wary, and as I said, I treat them with the utmost respect, and I never ever make pacts or agreements with them, because they will never go your way, and it's not even a good idea to tell them your name, your real name. Yeah, just be really careful if you're working with them. And you know, you do you. Maybe you have wonderful working relationships with these beings, but yeah, I don't. Well, not that I don't. I have bad relationships. I'm just saying I just don't go there. I just don't go there. And that's just me. And it's my my own stuff and my own fears coming into it. But yeah, I would definitely not be inviting them into my house. I don't have any of those fairy doors or anything like that in my house, because, you know, for me, it's just inviting trouble in. With a capital T at sometimes, really and truly. And I treat them with respect, but I keep them at a long, you know, arm's length. So that's just me, as I said. You do you. But that's just my word of warning, you know. Be careful with, you know, this, the Samhain, the Halloween thing of trick or treating. You know, there's a reason why it's called trick or treating. Anyway, do your own research. And as I said, I will definitely try. There's a couple of people I have in mind who are real experts on the subject. I am not, so I'm not going to pretend that I am. But all I'm saying is that I just think just be careful, and certainly don't let them trick you into making agreements or pacts or anything like that. Okay, so when we start out in this kind of work, how do we know who our guides are and who they aren't? I think my next podcast, I'm going to do a guided meditation to meet your animal guide. And that can take a while, so don't be disgruntled or discouraged if that doesn't happen the first time. Sometimes, you know, your animal guides are literally waiting to pounce on you, and I don't mean in a vicious way, because they're like, oh my God, I've been waiting for so long for this person to open this door to spirit and to come to spirit and to, you know, to enter into this world. Phew, thank God he or she is here. And sometimes they can be a bit wary, and they're like, I don't know if I'm going to make myself known yet. Or sometimes you just go in and you're bombarded by lots of different animals, and you need to find which animal is your animal or animals. So when that happens, and I'll be saying this again, I'm sure, but just in case you come up across this between now and then, what you do is you follow your intuition. And just to remember that not all guides are there to help. But the good news is that when we do first start this kind of work, we're very, very, very safe. We're very protected by all our guides. Very, very protected, like sometimes overprotected. And I have stories about that. And I will go into that too in another podcast. But so just to remember that. And the first thing, you use your intuition. OK, you use your intuition and you kind of go, well, does this animal, and you keep an open mind. I remember once I was doing a guided meditation this years ago with somebody. And well, there was four people in the group. And when we came out of the meditation, and I was guiding them to meet their animal guides. And it was at that time I was kind of guiding people into a forest, and you go through the forest and, you know, you wait for an animal to approach you or to see an animal or whatever. And when we came out, you know, it was time for the feedback and that. And the first person said to me, well, you know, yeah, I met my guide, blah, blah, blah. I can't remember what it was now, but that was fine. And then the second person said, well, you know, I'm not sure, but, you know, I did see a fox, and I think I didn't get to speak to it, or, you know, but I think that was my, and that's grand. You know, sometimes it can take 2 times, 3, 4, 10 times to do these journeys to to really meet your guide for the first time and to find your guide and for your guide to find you. So that was fine. Great. Then the other person was, well, you know, I was in the forest and I don't really know. I saw a cow, but like, what would a cow be doing in the forest? And I was just like, oh, you know, yeah, that's your guide. And then the other person just turned around to me and said, oh, well, I don't know about the guide. I couldn't even see the feckin' trees. So that person just didn't see anything. And, you know, that's a very real thing as well. At the start, you definitely, you know, can take time, and journey work is a muscle and it's developing a muscle. And also visualization is really a skill that you learn and get stronger as you go on. And not everybody has that when they first start out. So just to keep that in mind as well. Don't let it discourage you. You know, keep going. This work is so, so amazing. And it, the journey is so amazing, not just the destination. You know, keeping track of the journey and just really enjoying the journey rather than just getting to the destination. So anyway, we use our intuition. So as I said, it might take a while to meet an animal guide, or, you know, you might meet your animal guide straight away, or it might be exactly who or what you thought it was. You may have been having dreams about this, you know, this animal for years, or might have been coming to you in visions or meditations, you know, that was your animal guide knocking on the door. Or, you know, you might have been seeing a lot of this animal when out and about nature, that kind of thing. Or sometimes there's loads of animals and you have to kind of use your intuition to really decide, try and work out which one is your animal. Or sometimes you don't see anything and it can just take a while, but it will happen eventually. And oh yeah, and another thing that's really important, obviously, is that not everybody sees, you know. Sometimes it's a feeling. I had somebody I was working with once, and you know, all of, like, I'm a very visual person, so all of my journeys are very visual and I see what's happening in my mind. Some people it's less visual and more feeling, like it's literally like just feeling what's going on. Other people it's auditory. Other people it's, you know, it could be smell. Some people journey in black and white, some people journey in vibrant color. I've heard of people my teacher told me about somebody she worked with who journeyed in cartoon. You know, when I journey, I have an inner voice that narrates everything. Some people don't. It's just everybody's journeys are different. Everybody's journeys are different, and they're as different as everybody is. So it's really to keep an open mind and to keep all your senses alert. So yeah, to use your intuition when you go to find your animal guide. And then when you find a guide that you think might be your animal guide, what you can do is ask it 3 times. Are you my animal guide? And if you get yes as an answer 3 times, then you found your animal guide. And that's great. And I'm so excited for you. So our next podcast will be me guiding you to meet your animal guide. And it's something that you can listen to many times over, as many times as you need to get there. So I don't want you to be discouraged if it doesn't happen the first time. And I'll be talking you through it all anyway when we get to the next podcast. I really hope you've enjoyed this, and maybe you've got something out of it. As I said, I just want to reiterate once more, this is all my opinion. It's coming from my experience and from what I was taught and from, you know, books I've read, but mostly from my own experience with spirit and in spirit. So please, please, please do me a massive big favor. Like and share, subscribe to this podcast if you can. If you feel like you're getting anything from it, please do. It just really, really helps me. And it lets me know that you're enjoying this. And it, you know, I'm not getting anything else out of it. I'm just doing this because this is my passion, and it's my, you know, it's my vocation in life. So I really hope that you, you know, you might be getting something out of it. And that's how I know whether you are or not. And it just gives me incentive to keep going. I would anyway, but you know, it's just really nice. It helps my ego, and you know, it just helps me to know that you're enjoying it, and you're getting, maybe getting something out of it. And feel free to email me. Go onto my website, www.irishshamanism.com, and go onto the contact page and send me an email. If you have any questions or comments or anything else, anything you'd like to say or comment about, please, please do. It just makes my day when I hear back from people. If anyone's listening, then it just makes my day. And then after that, after the next podcast, which as I said, will be a journey to meet your animal guide, we'll be talking about what to do once you've met your animal guide or your guides. How do you work with them? And what do you do next? So, again, please like, comment, subscribe, and I love you all. Speak to you in the next one.